Welcome to Grow in Grace Podcast, where we want to encourage you to think deeply about God so that you can know Him and love Him better. Join us as we strive to grow in grace together. Welcome to the Grow in Grace Podcast. We are your hosts, Shanna and Kristen, and today we have a phenomenal guest for you guys that we are so excited to hear her story. But first, hi, Kristen.
Hi, Shanna. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I am very good. Let's see. I won't say weekly because we don't put these out weekly. Our bi-weekly catch up on what's going on in our lives, right? So let's see. The last time we talked, I was going to a Reds game that weekend, and I went to the Reds game and they lost. So that was a bummer. It was the only one that they lost out of that series, but that's okay because there were surprise fireworks that night. Like usually, so with the Reds games, Usually they do fireworks on Friday nights. We went on Saturday night and they had fireworks Saturday night too. They had fireworks the night before and fireworks again on Saturday. So that was fun. I enjoyed getting to watch the fireworks. And then since then I had a birthday last week.
Yeah, you did.
And I got to go and spend the whole day at the zoo, which was so much fun. I am a sucker for the zoo and I get to go to the Cincinnati Zoo. So if any of you guys know about Fiona the hippo and like her world famousness that she was born as a preemie and like is now thriving. So we got to go see Fiona and the whole family. And it's just like this big thing in Cincinnati. Like Cincinnati loves, we have two claims to fame right now. Yep. Two of those. one of them was when poor Harambe was put down because a child fell into the gorilla enclosure. If those of you remember that.
I do.
And then we have Fiona. So I'm sure there's other notable things about the Cincinnati Zoo. It's like one of the oldest zoos in the country, but I love the zoo. I have a season pass to it. So
when you told me you were going to the zoo for your birthday, I'm like, I cannot even fathom walking around outside that long right now.
It was a pretty nice day when we went.
I know, but I'm in Texas.
It was like, it was like in the 80s.
My kids, oh my goodness gracious. My kids are like, we have Six Flags. Like for Christmas, they got Six Flags passes. And we've been one time because it's today it's 105. And I'm like, I cannot do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds like a really fun
But yeah, though. That was kind of, and then I, you know, spent time with family, went out to eat with my parents and things like that. So, but it's been a really fun, good past couple weeks. How about you? Yeah. What's new in your life?
Yeah. Last time we talked, my kids were at Grand Camp and they bless my in-laws. They had all six grandkids in a camper and they went to Arkansas and went camping and all the kids got sick in that camper. And so I'm like, bless their hearts. But yeah, so I went.
But also hard on you as mom, right? To have your kids sick and not be there. Like,
yeah, like I knew they were
fine. Like obviously
they were in good hands and my mother-in-law's raised three boys. So
exactly.
It was fine.
But still,
your mama's heart's like, aw. But I knew she, you know, they were fine.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Like you said. So we went to Oklahoma and picked them up and we went to, my niece was baptized. And so we got to go celebrate her baptism with her. Aww. And then we came back and our church, we have this like, promotion Sunday and we have like what we call a kindergarten blessing and it's like rising kindergartners, like they're going to first grade. And it was Oliver. And so our preschool ministry is kinder and down, like birth to kinder. And so I don't have any more kids in our preschool ministry. Both my kids are in elementary ministry now, which is where I serve the most. So I'm really excited for that. But it was just a really sweet Sunday we wrote a letter to him and all the parents got to read a letter and just call out like what we see in them and their strengths and our hopes for them. And we pray over them. And it was just, it's one of my favorite things they do just to see all these parents speaking truth over their kids. It was so sweet. So yeah, we did that last week and now we're just that time to get back to school. You know, we're not doing it yet, but starting to get ready. And then I'm like, where did this summer go?
Yeah, I know. It's already August.
You're in your fall mode, right?
I am. We were just discussing even beforehand. Yes. I'm holding off. Like, I've been burning fall candles for a couple weeks now. I'm really trying to make it till the middle of August before I decorate, but it's really hard because I really love fall.
If I had your weather, I probably would already do it.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? But we were talking about the weather. Like, it's for the next 10-day forecast, we're not getting out of the 80s. Like, it's going to be 80, 86, 87. And even, you know, one day is going to be a high of like the high 70s. So it's like we're transitioning into fall. And I'm okay with it. And it's still 100 degrees there. I know.
104 today. Texas is not getting the memo.
Well, Texas doesn't get the memo until like November. So
yeah, like there's our fall in time for Christmas. Hey, one thing I'm really excited to announce is that we have been working, I think we announced it before, we have been working on some merch. Yeah. That we are hoping to get up and going on our website soon.
Yo, there's a lot that goes into getting merch on the website. Really? Like, there were steps that we had to take that we didn't even know we had to take. And so it's been a bit of a slow process as we learn, but yeah, we are super excited to get it up.
Yeah, we are. And one thing that we love, I mean, we just love our design, our logo. My friend did a great job on that, but we purposely did not put the word podcast on our logo because while that we are a podcast, but we have big hopes and dreams for this that may go outside of podcasting. And so if you like our logo and you want to buy something just to remind you to grow in grace, right? Doesn't have to be us, but also if you love us.
Because I'm not typically one that will wear anything like very podcast related. I'm just weird like that. So our logo, I feel, is really great because who doesn't need to be reminded of growing in grace and not just our podcast, but just that in general and the scriptures that go with that. So, and it's a pretty logo.
That's right. That will hopefully be soon. We'll keep you posted on that. And then I get to see you.
Yes.
Now that it's August, I get to see you in a couple months.
Exactly. Now you can say in a couple months.
We were looking at, we were talking logistics with like what we're going to do. And, you know, like it's that time to
how we get there.
look for flights and hotels. And I'm really excited for the sake of the gospel conference, November 3rd and 4th in Danville, Virginia. And registration is open now.
Yeah. Registration is open on the recoveringfundamentalist.org, I believe is the website.
That's
that was
right
off the top of my head.
So proud of you.
But yes, registration is open. It opened August 1st. So go on ahead. If you are interested in going, check it out and register to go and come hang out with us.
Yeah.
We're a good time.
It is.
We have fun.
It's going to be a good time.
So today we are super excited. We have our friend Amy here with us. And Amy, we got to know through the RFP fan page, the Facebook page, just in posting and kind of commenting on different things. The things that I saw her post and comment were always very just God-centered and just very theologically sound. And so it kind of always piqued my interest. And then I think she shared just tiny bits and pieces of her story on the page as well. And I just thought it was such a great story and a great way that she continuously points back to God throughout her entire story. And so we wanted to bring her on and introduce her to our listeners and just to be able to chat and hear a little bit more about your story as well, Amy. Mm-hmm. So welcome.
Hey, I'm glad to be here. Thank you guys for having me on.
Yeah. Yay. And the devil is already working against us. She, about 5 minutes
today
before we were scheduled to record, she messaged us and said that a transformer blew outside of her house, so they had no electric. And so she's in her car. She is being a trooper and still getting this recorded in her car. And so we are going to persevere and figure this out and get your story out one way or another.
That's right.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So, hey, Amy, I just want to say your like Twitter account is like one of my favorites.
Really?
I love it so much. 'Cause I'm like, look at her like spitting truth, like unashamed. And so I don't know. I just want to tell you, I love following you on Twitter. Most random thing I'll say today, but it's really refreshing to see people who have come kind of like from our background and really want to seek truth for themselves and to fall more in love with Jesus, no matter what. And so we are just really, thank you for being here and for doing this in your car. And so, yeah, we would just love to hear your story.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I'm really excited to be here. And the devil is definitely fighting with this transformer issue, but my story, I absolutely love sharing my testimony. I actually got saved in a service where everybody was sharing their testimony. So it's really exciting. But something that's kind of changed for me in the last year is that rather than looking at my testimony as like a snapshot of when I got saved, like the night I got saved, I've kind of pulled back, scaled back a little bit. And I'm looking at my entire life, starting from birth all the way to today. And when we think about Scripture and the storyline of Scripture, our pastor always says this, there's a storyline of creation. We have a God who created perfect people, and then they fell into sin, and then he is redeeming his people and bringing restoration to them. And so when I think about my story, I don't really consider it to be my story. I consider myself to just be a little character in this grander story. So whenever I think about my story, as I said, I don't necessarily consider it to be my story. We used to have this slogan at this church I used to go to, and we'd always say, my story, his glory. But like I said, it's his story for his glory. Mm-hmm. And God brings us through things, and I know you all can relate with this. He brings us through things in our lives that make sense, and we feel like he is nowhere to be found. But then later on, we can look back and see his hand all over it. I think modern Christianity, we kind of act like God moves in a rushing wind or a lightning bolt or, you know, just a voice that kind of pops in our head at random times. But more often than not, I have found that it's often when I look back.
Absolutely.
So when I have listened to you all on your episodes on the attributes, I've really enjoyed them because as you all are discussing these, I'm like, man, I can see each of these things playing out in my life. Again, when I'm just looking at that snapshot of the night I got saved, I'm not seeing all of that. So as I said, scaling back and just really, really looking at what God's done. Going back to the beginning, I won't go all the way back to the day I was born. I was joking with my husband. I was like, I'll tell him I was born on a Tuesday.
It was a cold, dark night.
Yeah, but I started out in church, basically. My parents were stationed in Germany. My dad was in the military. He was stationed in Germany when I was about a year old, and they wanted to find a church, and they found a little independent fundamental Baptist church planted by American missionaries that were there to reach the military. So it was really cool being overseas and having people that not only were like-minded, but they were also military. So my parents really found a good sense of community there. And it was Christian. And for me, those are really super fond memories. This is where I learned about Jesus. This was, you know, Sunday school, the Bible songs. I made a profession of faith when I was 5. I don't believe I was truly converted, but I always look back at that and say God planted a seed. Those were just such good memories. And when people ask me about Germany, I don't have a lot of memories of living there, but I do always remember being at church. We were there every time the doors were open. It was no different than an American IFB church. They did all the things. Whereas it was very positive for me, my parents really began to experience a lot of legalism and spiritual abuse. And I think in some ways, my dad probably gravitated towards it at first because he was Army and he liked that structure. Mm-hmm. But it was very hard on my family and on my older brothers. I have 4 older brothers. And so for them, their experience with it is a lot different than mine. I was so little. And like I said, I mean, this was like the best time. And I started school there, learned to read, all those sweet things. So my dad retired whenever I was 6 years old, and we moved back to the States, moved back to Louisville, Kentucky, where we have some family, and we got hooked up with another IFB church. And again, loved it. I absolutely loved it. My dad was brought on as the assistant principal in their Christian school. My mom was a bookkeeper. So we were there all the time, every day. And it was just, I don't know, just really happy memories. But by the time I was about 9, my parents really got tired of the pressure, legalism. There was some mishandling of money and all of that. So they finally decided it was time to go. And we began to try to find other non-IFB churches. My mom was raised, she was actually converted from Catholic to Christianity in her early 20s. So we tried like non-denominational and stuff like that. But by the time I was about 9 or 10, my dad was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And I think, I mean, I'm not going to speak for him, but I think adjusting to civilian life after so many years in the Army and all of that, I just think it all kind of imploded on him. And so my family really struggled with finding their place after leaving the IFB. And I think they just didn't trust church leaders, pastors. They didn't trust the situation anymore. And my mom always stayed faithful to some kind of church. She would go somewhere, but not really my dad. So by the time I was about 15, I was completely out of church and I just stopped going. I had tried youth group at a non-denominational church, but I fundamentally misunderstood Christianity and the gospel. I just saw it as what you do. You know, this was early 2000s, so we have the purity culture and, you know, Christian rock and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And it just seemed kind of lame to me because I had been taken out of Christian school. I was in public school by this point. And so I kind of was living this double life, you know, where I try to go to youth group and be a good Christian kid. And then I, you know, have my non-church friends. And it just always seemed like something you were putting on rather than something that was transforming your life. I didn't have any concept of that. And I would try to be good, but I also liked to sin. And I liked boys. I liked my music. And honestly, you know, youth pastor would be like, hey, you like this band? Well, I've got a Christian rock version. And that, I just thought that was so dumb. And so I really did. I'm like, you guys, this is generic. That was always my word. This is generic. So I never could get into the whole youth group thing. So I kind of swung from trying to be the good Christian kid to being very wild and kind of running around with boys and getting into trouble as a teenager, very rebellious. I wouldn't have called myself a Christian, but I believed in God. You know, I lived in Kentucky. Virtually everybody said they believe in God here. So, and I was very aware of my eternity, probably because of those early years in ISB and growing up in the Left Behind generation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I was always wondering, like, when Jesus was coming back.
Terrified.
But again, I wasn't going to give up my sin and my boys and all that kind of stuff. Good. That's all I thought Christianity was. And my teen years, things were very chaotic at home between my parents, just a lot of back and forth. And I really desired attention. I wanted love. And so I began a relationship when I was about 14, 15 with a guy that was too old for me. And that continued through my high school years. And it was something where I was finding in him that security, I guess, because he was a man. I found some kind of security and love in him that I just so deeply desired. And I just wanted that attention so badly. So by the time I graduated from high school, my parents were divorced and I went to Western Kentucky University, which was about an hour and a half from home, and actually went there to follow this guy. He had been in college for a while and I was like, okay, now we can really be together, you know. And by God's providence, he didn't want anything to do with me. So I was heartbroken about that already. And this is kind of where I started really spiraling out of control. I got introduced to fraternity parties, which you watch movies about fraternity parties, I would say that these were just like what you would imagine. They were gross. And I was just making a lot of really reckless decisions at this point and getting drunk and putting myself in situations where I look back, I'm like, I could have been raped or killed. And there was one particular party that I love telling people about, interestingly enough. I was acting very dumb. I was drunk. And we would, like, a group of girls would go. And normally one girl would kind of stay sober and, you know, make sure everybody was okay. Well, this particular girl kind of, I don't even know her name, but she just kind of followed me the entire night and just kind of watched over me. And like, I remember there was this particular fraternity brother that was trying to like get with me or whatever, and I wasn't really interested. And she kind of watched over me that night and like made sure I got home to my dorm. And I don't remember ever talking to her again, but I, like I said, I look back to those experiences and I'm like, even though I wasn't saved, I believe God was protecting me. And so that was a really just dark time because, yeah, I guess I was having fun, but you know, like I said, I was making these really bad decisions. So simultaneously as I'm partying and doing all this crazy stuff, this lady from Campus Crusade for Christ crew reaches out to me and she invites me to a Bible study. And I decide, because I'm feeling pretty low at this point with all of these decisions I've made, I'm like, well, okay, I guess it can't hurt. I'll make some friends that are not so much trouble. And these girls were really kind to me. They were very welcoming and hospitable. They took me to a worship service. And I didn't go very many times, but it was just kind of something God used to soften my heart towards church. Because by that point, I was very disillusioned by it all between what my parents had told me and then the youth group. And so these girls were just very kind, and that was a very good experience. And so towards the end of the semester, my grades were doing well and everything, but like I said, I was really struggling. Towards the end of the semester, I went away with some friends and was sexually assaulted. And the next day I woke up thinking this was my fault. Mm. And, you know, because I again had been drunk, I had been kind of throwing myself all over this guy. And so I really felt like this was my fault. I didn't have any kind of awareness as to what sexual assault is. This was before Me Too, you know. So I didn't really tell anybody. I just kind of kept it in. I couldn't tell the girls from the Bible study, so I stopped going to that because I felt like, how am I going to tell them that even though I'm trying to be this good Christian girl now, that I just went and got drunk with a bunch of guys and, you know, acted like that. Because in my mind, Christian girls were perfect little virgins and, you know, with their purity rings and all that. They never acted that way, but that was my perception. And so I couldn't face them. And so after that, I decided I did not want to be at Western anymore. So I came home, and that was kind of the end of the college chapter. Like I said, I was making good grades and I made the dean's list, so I didn't flunk out or anything like that. I wanted to be home. And I decide that I'm going to give this Christianity thing a try. And because after all that, I felt so much shame and embarrassment. I didn't want to live like that anymore. And I figured I could just pull myself up by my bootstraps and try to be good. So a lady that my mom worked with at the time, my mom would kind of tell her about my woes and boy trouble and all of that. She told my mom, she said, I'm going to set her up with a nice Christian boy. I guess that's what she thought I needed, another boy. Yeah, but it works out. So she calls the associate pastor's son from her church. She asks him if he wants to go on a blind date. So the guy that turns out to be my brother-in-law, he's not really interested in dating me. And so she asks his older brother, and he says, yeah, I'll go for it. And he's the type that will make friends with anybody, loves people. So he gives me a call and we talk on the phone for about 2 hours. And I'm just very open and honest with him about everything that I've ever done. And I just remember he was so kind and so gracious. And I knew he was a church boy. I knew his dad was an associate pastor, and I just remember being so surprised that he was so kind and just understanding, and I had a blast talking to him. So he invited me to church, because that's what good church boys do, and it was a little ISB church, Independent Fundamental Baptist, and this church reminded me of everything that I had early in my childhood. The hymns and the King James and all the old folks. The people were very sweet, and I met my husband's entire family within the first service because they were all there, you know. So it felt like a replacement for everything that I had lost. It was just very comforting after all of the things I'd been through. And my husband and I, we met. So it was December of 2008 that we met. We got married in April of 2009. So we got married super fast. I was 18 and he was 21. So we were babies. And I don't always recommend that to people. But so we get married and we're very faithful to church, and things have kind of turned around for me just kind of behavior wise. And I'm hearing the gospel for the first time, like really understanding. You know, I'd always heard Jesus died on the cross for your sins. But it never translated to me. I knew it. I knew all about it, but it never translated. And I remember one night we were sitting in church and it just hit me. Oh, he did that for me. And then learning that I didn't have to be perfect and pull myself up by my bootstraps to be perfect and, check off this box of all the things that I have to stop doing. But it's all about Christ and what he's done. And so after about a year of going there, I got saved. And I trusted Christ as my savior. And that was when my life did a complete 180. It wasn't just the behavior modification and trying to be good. But now here I am. I have a desire for the word. I have a desire to be at church every time the doors are open. And the Bible, even though I was only reading the King James, it began to make a little bit more sense to me. Like it actually meant something to me to sit down and read my Bible. I found out I was pregnant within just a couple of weeks after I got saved. And I just remember that being such a sweet time of new life. You know, I was growing my little baby, and I'm also experiencing this new life as a new Christian and being a new creation. And also the IFB, this little church, as I'm beginning to take on some of the standards and preferences and all of that kind of stuff, I began to think that this church, this belief system, is exactly what went wrong in my life. I looked back at my parents and I was very angry with them. And I was like, see, if you guys would have just stayed in the Independent Baptist Church, mm-hmm. we would have all stayed together. You guys wouldn't have gotten divorced. And I just bought into all of it. I loved all of it. And so the King James was pretty much a given. That was what I, what we believed. I wasn't going to question that. And then I began to slowly do things like throw away my CDs and, separate myself from friends who didn't have the same convictions. I never threw away my pants though. I still continued to wear pants. I never wore pants to church. So I was very much the kind of person that was like, if a woman was wearing pants on the platform, I thought that was a shame. And everything, was all about appearances and, making sure you looked like a Christian and your witness and your testimony. And I was also questioning whether or not every little thing I did was a sin, So whether it was a song that I was going to play at church that day, I bore the weight of every decision that I made because I felt like God was kind of reacting to me as I lived my life. Mm-hmm. Like if I don't play the right song at church today, I might not get saved. Mm-hmm. So that kind of began to be my mentality towards everything. And if something bad happened, it had to be because God was mad at me. So that was my life, but it was all I knew, and it felt very safe, and I was content there. And I kind of all imploded. I was there about 6 years. This was the only church that my husband had ever been a part of from birth on. And about 6 years in, our pastor got caught cheating on his wife with a young woman. And so that was hard enough. He had to resign, and we lost our pastor, only pastor my husband had had. And he was somebody that, you know, I loved and appreciated. And then within a few weeks of that, the church split kind of over what to do next. So we wound up leaving the church, and that was very hard. Kind of felt like being orphaned, especially for my husband. We didn't have that bubble anymore. And it was a very weird thing to have gone from being there all the time to no longer. And so our world got completely turned upside down. But within a couple of days of us leaving, we had another pastor reach out to us. He had previously been our Sunday school teacher, and he was kind of a mentor to us, somebody we looked up to. He was a few years older, and my husband had grown up with him. And he reached out and said, you know, I have a place for you at our church. My husband had just recently started preaching, and, you know, he said, I know you have a desire for ministry. I can mentor you and train you. So it just seemed like this church was going to be everything we ever wanted, and it was going to fill that void of what we had just lost. And, you know, we went, and the people there were kind and very sweet folks still to this day. And within a month of us leaving our first church, we were working with the youth, working with the youth choir. I was playing piano on Sunday nights. We were members. We were in there full steam, and we had never taken any time to really process or grieve. We didn't think we needed to. We were in a hurry. We were afraid to miss out on this opportunity because, you know, what if we miss out on this and we mess up God's plan or something? Mm-hmm. And so we're there and we're doing all of this, but it was almost like immediately God was telling us not to, because almost as soon as we start going to this church, my children are getting sick. I had 3 kids under 5 at that time. They started getting sick every week. I couldn't make it. I was also dealing with really intense anxiety. I think part of it was probably hormonal from just having a baby, but I was also questioning a lot of things. I never doubted my belief in God, but I began to question my salvation. I think because my security of everything had been so uprooted, and I watched a holy man of God fall, and I thought, well, if he can do that, am I really God's? And, you know, I really began to question. And then when you're in those really intense services with these drawn out altar calls and, you know, do you know that you know that you know you're saved? I spent many nights in torment, and I, you know, people would say, like, go back to the day you were saved, and I would pick that apart. And so I was in a lot of torment and anxiety. And then another thing that was happening was that my husband's work, he worked in a printing factory at the time. They were making him work a lot more hours, so he wasn't able to be at church. And so it was very difficult for us to live the dream at this church that was giving us all these opportunities and have sick kids and have to be at work. So my husband decides to do probably one of the dumbest things we've ever done. He was at work one night. And it was a Sunday night, and the pastor texted him, and he said, it's too bad you're working tonight. I was going to have you preach. And my husband was like, oh my gosh, I'm being unfaithful to my church. So he quit his job. And, you know, I remember, like, I knew as soon as he did it, we made a mistake, but we just had to roll. And so he began to be the yes man for the pastor doing that. And then we weren't on staff at this church at all, so we weren't being paid. But he began to paint houses and detail cars and different things like that. And he's got mechanic skills, so he was fixing cars for people and things like that. And in spite of that really dumb decision, I just want to say God was faithful through that. Our bills were paid. We never ran out of food. We were able to provide Christmas for our kids that year. I don't know how it was possible, but God provided through that, in spite of us just being completely stubborn. And then after about 4 months of doing that, my husband got a call for a job that we'd been praying for him to get for a couple of years. And it was a really good job, but it was another factory. So factory work, a lot of times you have long hours, work in the heat, all that kind of stuff. And the pastor was not happy that he was going to take that job. He really wanted to keep my husband on that kind of just working the side jobs so he could be more available. He wasn't happy. So we decided to take this job because we have three kids, we need health insurance. And so we just did what we had to do, but that made it very hard. And we just tried to push forward and fit the mold of a good preacher and preacher's wife. We were trying to make ourselves more seen in the little region of IFB churches here. You all know they don't say they're a denomination, but they have their little camps and cliques. And we would go to camp meeting, and I always joke and say the camp meeting was like the Grammys for Independent Baptists because they're all dressed up. And I remember I'd spend like hours on my hair and get my kids all perfect and his clothes would be perfect. And, you know, we'd go and I don't even know. We were just a couple of jokers just showing up like we thought we were something. And people just didn't pay a lot of attention to us. And maybe we were just total weirdos. Or, as I would like to believe, God was saying, no, you're not going to fit into this little world. I've got better for you. At the time, I didn't know that. And I remember just beating myself up, like, what am I doing wrong? Should I stop wearing pants? Should I throw out more of my music? What am I doing wrong? My husband was agonizing over, you know, his job, keeping him from being able to be more present at the church. The pastor, our relationship with him was very unhealthy. He was very manipulative. It seemed like his expectations of us were constantly changing. Like there would be a rule that he had for us, but we didn't know about it until we'd broken it. We'd get pulled into the office and he'd be like, well, this isn't supposed to be this way. He was very big on crushing us under the weight of expectations so that we would grovel and, you know, just do whatever he wanted. But after a while, we were very exhausted with this, living this way. And one night in particular, we went to where my in-laws go to church, or were going to church at the time. My father-in-law was going to preach that night. And the pastor there, he's an independent Baptist, but I would say he's more maybe one of the reasonable ones. And, you know, he had some age and wisdom. And he sat my husband down and basically told him, you've got to get your family out of this church. It's killing your family. You need to take time to sit and heal from your experience at your very first church. And you need to take care of your family. And of course, my husband says, what about all of my friends and all my opportunities? What about the ministry? Pastor looked at him square in the eye and said, you are spiritually immature. You are not even fit to be doing this. You need to be taking care of your family and you need to heal. Of course, we didn't listen right away. We went back to our church. We were taking it in. We took it in, but we didn't listen to it right away. It took us about 6 months. Things just continued to get more and more crazy. It felt with this pastor, it just felt like his mood towards us all was based on how we performed. And so if we weren't making him happy, he gave us the cold shoulder. He would talk to us a few weeks. And if we were doing really well, then we were the best thing ever. And we were just tired of it. And so we decided to leave. I got to the point where I said, if I perish, I perish. I knew that I would probably lose friends and that the pastor would not be happy, but we had to do it. And so we left, and it did not end on a good note, sadly. But like I said, I just got to the point where I didn't care. So after that church, we took some time and visited that church where that pastor who would talk to us. We visited there for about a year, and he was very kind to us. And he told us, he was like, you all just need to listen to the preaching and just sit and chill. And no pressure at all to do anything. They were wonderful. And that was where I kind of got exposed to expository preaching for the first time. Rather than somebody getting up and yelling about a bunch of nonsense for 30 minutes, he actually had paper on the platform.
Yeah.
And I remember being like, wow. And so we visited there, and then it was kind of far away from home, and we tried another church. And, you know, I kind of joke and say we went through a church hopper phase because we were really trying to find a good church that was healthy, but we were still trying to hold on to our King James only position. And the only other Baptist churches in our area, they weren't King James only, and they were Calvinists. And I thought that they were demons. So I wasn't trying their church.
Sorry, I didn't mean giggle.
And so, so as we were trying to find a church, we were kind of breaking down maybe some of those silly standards that we had had before, like dress and music and what we wanted out of leadership, you know, or not necessarily what we wanted, but like, what is biblical leadership look like? What is it to be in a healthy church? We were starting to ask these questions, and it was really good for us to go through that time and kind of develop maybe a healthier conscience about some things. And then about 2 years ago, we decided to move about an hour and a half away from home to help a friend of ours who had just planted a church and just kind of help him and serve wherever needed. This was one of my husband's closest friends. And so we moved all the way out here. So we couldn't find a house in the town where the church was. We wound up moving about 20 minutes away, which I found kind of interesting because I find it interesting now, because at the time I was like, why can't we find a house here? But I believe God was working it out. We moved here, and this was another independent Baptist church, but it was a pretty pleasant experience. I would say the pastor was definitely more conservative than us, but he wasn't heavy-handed the same way as I had experienced in the past. So I felt like I was able to be more myself, all of that. But as we started serving there, my husband began teaching Sunday school, and him and another guy would alternate every other week. And as he's teaching Sunday school, he begins to discover for himself expository teaching and preaching. And it was completely life-changing for him. He felt like, for the first time, rather than just getting up and saying a bunch of stuff and then not knowing what he really said after, he really felt like he was able to begin to dig into the text and understand what was trying to be said. And God began to convict him of legalism and pride and self-righteousness. And also, as my husband is studying this, he's beginning to study things like the doctrines of grace, the sovereignty of God. That I really began to see a shift in him as he was doing that. Also, my husband began listening to this thinking podcast called the Recovering Fundamentalist podcast. And I had already listened to it and decided I didn't want to. Nathan said he leaned reformed, and I already told y'all Calvinists are demons. So I couldn't listen. I couldn't listen to them. I couldn't do it. So he starts listening to this podcast. I think it was around the Phil Kidd episode. I think that's when a lot of people kind of got sucked into it. And he listened to a particular episode with Brian Townsend, and Brian had asked a question about the King James Bible, or made a statement. He said, there's nowhere in the Bible that says the King James only translation. Mm-hmm. And my husband comes home and tells me this, and I'm like, you're nuts. Stop listening to them. They're compromisers. They all, if you leave the King James, you're going to wind up a Calvinist. Stop it. So I told him, we're not listening to that anymore. Of course, he's not going to listen to me. He kept on listening. And then I got curious and started listening myself. And that I listened to one particular episode, and I just remember being like, okay, so these guys are crazy, but they do get it. They are talking about the experiences that I've had. Like, they understand. And so we began to really examine, again, my husband's teaching this Sunday school class. We're examining things like the King James only position. And we arrive at, you know, the conclusion that we can't hold that position anymore. We, in good conscience, we couldn't say we were only. Now at this church teaching, we agreed, you know, we told the pastor we would only use King James Bible because that was their standard. But it was just fundamentally just disagreement across the board. They were not okay with that. And they also weren't okay with us studying Reformed theology, even studying it. They weren't okay with that. And so we decided we needed to leave. which was really hard because my kids and this pastor's kids were very close. You know, they've all known each other since they were babies, but we just felt like it was the best thing to not, we weren't going to stay there and try to make them go along with what we were doing. So we left and we found a church locally that we feel they preach the word, and the preaching and the teaching, I say every week I leave just kind of stuffed full because it is so rich and doctrinally sound, all of those things. And so that was about a year ago when we began going to this church. God began to really convict us about, again, legalism, self-righteousness, pride, and I began to see it in my own life. When I was working with the youth and I was playing piano and serving in the church, trying to be a perfect preacher's wife, I was more concerned about being seen and about performing than I was about serving the Lord from a good heart. I was more concerned about pleasing my pastor than I was about serving the Lord. And that really broke me whenever I realized that, because I could go back to my old journals back from when I first got saved and see this sincere desire for the Lord and for the word and that desire to be at church and to serve. Loved it. But then something happened and I began to get sucked into this performance mentality, living for acceptance rather than from it. That I kind of came face to face with God's holiness, that all this stuff that I thought was just making me so spiritual and so set apart and sanctified, it was all wood, hay, and stubble. And it broke my heart. And that was when I really began to understand just the fullness of the gospel. Because a lot of the time, anytime I felt any kind of conviction, it was more heavy that I would begin to question my salvation and things like that. But in this particular moment, I repented and asked the Lord. I said, I'm so sorry for doing all of this for myself and for trying to promote myself. My husband had to go through the same thing with preaching. You know, he's not preaching right now. He is just sitting and hanging out and taking it all in. And he's had to repent of trying to make the ministry about self-gain. And, you know, we don't think that because we're just kind of going along with what everybody else is doing. And that was all we knew, you know, that style of preaching, like I said, where you're just getting up and yelling and you have a verse that's your springboard and then you just kind of rant about it for a while. He was very convicted about that. He can't even listen to old messages that he preached because of that. And so, but here's the thing, as shameful as that is, I'm so thankful for the gospel because I was able to rest in the fact that Christ died even for the sins that I've committed since I've been saved. You know, a lot of times we talk about our old past and, you know, before we saved, it's under the blood and all that. But Christ died for those sins too, the ones that I've committed in his name, you know. And so that's where we currently are, is we are healing our home, doing the work that we should have done, you know, how many years ago, that pastor told us we really needed to do. We're learning how to be a husband and a wife, you know, even though the IFB, they're very, I would say, some type of complementarian, I guess, but there's not really any good explanation of how a husband should lead and how a wife is supposed to follow and submit and all that. That's not really taught, not in a great depth. And we've been learning about that. How does that work? So we are learning how to disciple our children and train them in righteousness and really teaching them practical Christian living, not just, you know, waiting for them to make the profession of faith and then throw all the standards at them or making them obey externally so that they can make daddy look good. So it's been really joyful and beautiful and wonderful, but in a lot of ways also very painful and sometimes even lonely because of a lot, we've lost a lot, you know, having to walk away from all of that. But God has been so good and so kind to us during this time where we are going to church. Like I said, we're hearing the scriptures being preached. We've slowly but surely gotten involved in a community group and been getting to know some people, and the people have been loving on our kids and discipling. Our oldest, she's 11. She just got saved at the beginning of the year and was baptized, and she's been growing. It's been amazing to watch her grow. I mean, the preteen experience is kind of interesting, but it's been amazing to watch her grow spiritually. God's got us right here where we are, where we're learning about who he is, learning to love him more. And I sit here and I think about my whole life, like I told you all at the beginning, kind of scaling back, looking at everything, because I can't, if I just went back to the moment that I was saved, I'd be missing on the backstory of everything that God has done in my life. And I told you all how I had struggled with assurance of salvation. Part of what's helped me with that is learning about God's sovereignty and learning about how he chose me. He has sought after me before I even cared. He sought after me, put people in my life, put us in these little IFB churches in Germany, you know, where I was able to hear the gospel and hear about Jesus. He did all of that, brought me through my whole life in some brokenness and some loneliness and some dumb decisions. And he brought me right here. And he has not only drawn me, but he has kept me. Because goodness gracious, how many times I failed. And, you know, obviously, as I've talked about, you know, the way that we did ministry and all that. But how many times I could have just walked away from everything because of what I've seen. So he's been so good, and he's been good and kind in the sense that he didn't let us, the fact that we were trying to serve at that church and bang on those doors in spite of everything just not going the way it should go, he was kind to keep telling us no and to keep putting things in our path like, you are not doing this. He was kind and providing for us. He was faithful. So whenever I think about life, it's just, we sing a song at church sometimes, and the words are, what an amazing mystery that his grace has come to me. And it's an amazing mystery because I'm nobody special. I'm just, you know, living out here in Kentucky doing what I do. And I had people tell me when I was younger that I was a nobody. I wasn't going to make anything out of myself, too impulsive, too reckless. And yet God, in his kindness and his sovereignty, reached out through me to him. And so that story of my life up to this point, and God has been good, he's been faithful, and that's that.
Man, I had so many emotions listening to your story.
I know.
I related to so much of it. And I mean, even like how we got to Texas, that was the Lord. Like, I was kicking and screaming, you know, and then you look back on it and it's like this beautiful story of him just leading and providing, saying, hey, like, I know what's best, you know? And I just think of like listening, I relate to like the pride thing. I think there's so many times that we take on the Holy Spirit's responsibility for ourselves. Like, it's my job to do this. And if you don't believe, then it's on me. And we're not the Holy Spirit, you know, but underneath that, it is this sense of pride and selfishness. And I think it's really easy for anyone in ministry to experience that. I think I have to have a reality check myself. Like, am I serving my church because I want to serve the Lord in this area? Or am I serving the church to be seen and be like, that's still an ongoing struggle. But one thing I just wanted to say, that you are not just nobody in Kentucky. I think that, man, there's so much depth and wisdom into everything that you said. And, you know, your husband, like, you guys are just getting involved and he may not be preaching, but goodness, I just think of like your kids and like the generational change that's happening because you are discipling the whole person of your kid. And it's not just to please someone or to make you guys look good. I think that's a very real thing. And I think I still struggle with that with my kids. It's like, how they're acting or what they're going to do. And like, that makes me look bad. And sometimes we have to pull all that back. And like, I'm discipling a whole person, like mind, body, soul. And that is generational change. So your kids are going to benefit from these things that you guys have experienced, you know? And so that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it was such a delight to hear your story and to hear how you kept, like, one of the things that you said towards the end was just talking about how, you know, it was God's kindness that put those blocks in place, right? That wouldn't allow you guys to get the fame or notoriety or, you know, kind of that thing that you were desiring. And at the time you would not have said that is God's kindness in my life. Like that is a kind thing. Thank you, God, for doing that. Right. You wouldn't look at him and say, God, you are good for doing this. You and said, what are we doing wrong? Like, why is this not working out? What am I doing wrong? But then, like you said, you can look back and say, oh, there's God's kindness. Like I get it on this side of it, that he was protecting us, that he was had something else for us, that, like you said, he has something better. And it's just always so cool. And I wish in the midst of it sometimes that we could look at it and say, oh, that's God's kindness. Right. But it's so sweet to be able to look back and say, I see God's hand in this. I see his sovereignty. I see how he was removing me from a situation that I desperately wanted to be in. Like I desperately want to be in this situation. And God just goes, nope, I'm going to move you actually out of that. And there, and like Shanna said, there's so much that you said that resonates with some of our story, my story, and I know Shanna's story. And then even some of the conversations that we've had recently, as recently as like last night, some of the things we were talking about, I was like, oh, wow, she kind of hit on that. I wish, you know, we've talked about future episode ideas that we want to do. We've talked about like submission and the fact that the IFB doesn't do a very good job. Sometimes I won't say all churches, but a lot of them don't do a good job of explaining like the roles of a husband and a wife. And being able to say, okay, so if we are submit to our husband, what is our husband's role in that then? Like, what is his role to lead in all of those things? So it was just really cool to hear like how you've kind of hit on a lot of things that have been on our heart as well. So thank you so much. It's been an amazing, amazing time.
I remember whenever we first like saw you, Kristen and I were like messaging like separately. I was like, I want to be friends with her. I really like her. I want to be friends with her. And so we were like looking at our like schedule and Kristen's like, we should have Amy on. I was like, let's do it. And so you were the perfect guest to point back to attributes with your story. And honestly, I think the perfect guest to launch us into kind of what is coming for us. You've talked about expository preaching and Kristen and I have this desire for people to be able to study the Bible for themselves, not just listen to what their pastor says. In order to do that, Bible literacy is a big thing. And so that's kind of where we're heading next is people, you have to know how to study and read the Bible for yourself and trust the Holy Spirit to do the work, not rely on what someone's telling you. So,
yeah.
Hey, I really appreciate you for doing this in your car. Yeah. Are you, is it on? Is your car on? Are you hot? I mean, I'm in Texas and I'm like dying. So.
No, I've got my car on and then I've got my son and the neighborhood boy. They're out there playing.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, we may have to do this again sometime, friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Reoccurring guest.
Yeah. Hey. I love listening to you all. Your show is one of my favorites.
Oh, thank you.
Hey, Amy. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening to the Grow in Grace podcast. You can find us at growingracepodcast.com for links to all of our social medias, resources we suggest, and to listen to previous episodes. We hope you can join us next time as we strive together to grow in grace.